The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry with Joe McGill. Good morning, good morning. How are you this morning? I'm Joe McGill and you're listening to the Saturday Supplement. I hope I find you well wherever you are listening to us around the world on RadioKerry.ie, on the Radio Kerry app or on the traditional wireless 96 to 98 FM. We have a very special programme for you again this morning because Lessons in Awe is a new radio series and podcast series produced by Radio Kerry in collaboration with child and adolescent psychotherapist Edele Lawler and funded by Cumasúin na Mban with the television licence fee. It invites primary school children and young people in Kerry to explore the world around them and to share conversations with older generations. Now, each 15-minute episode focuses on a life theme. For example, nature, courage, sport, family, play and community, using the real voices of children, older people, local storytellers and invited guests. The series highlights moments of wonder, connection and reflection in a fast-changing world. Its goal is to help young people rediscover awe through personal stories, shared experiences and the natural environment, while also bridging generations through conversation and imagination. More than just a broadcast, Lessons in Awe invites children and adults to reconnect with themselves and each other. It reminds us that awe doesn't disappear with age, it grows stronger when shared. Now, as part of the series, we have a very special program this morning on courage. And courage is not just about showing up or standing up for something, facing our fears and overcoming challenges. It can mean many things. And today on the program, we're going to hear about times when young people and adults were brave or saw someone else show courage that inspired them. And my first guest this morning on the programme is Radio Kerry presenter and motivational speaker Ian O'Connell, who experienced a life-changing accident when he was just 15 years of age. Ian, thanks a million for talking to me and contributing to our series, Lessons in Awe. And this is where we're focusing on courage and bravery. And I think no one I've met has exemplified bravery or courage more than you. And we should say, for full transparency for the listeners, Ian, you were a student of mine in the Kerry College Radio Kerry Journalism and Broadcasting course as well. And you have your own programme on Radio Kerry now. And so tell people about that before we go back and tell about your story.
Yeah, I suppose I done the course and it was something that I really enjoyed. And it was, I suppose before I had my accident, it mightn't have been something that I would have gone into, but it's something that I absolutely love now. And yourself, you were the teaching with Connie, and I was lucky enough to get the show then on Radio Kerry Standout, and me interviewing somebody different every week that has overcome adversity or maybe that has achieved something big or different story, different kind of area every week. So no, I love it.
Yeah. Do you think your own situation kind of informed your opinion when you're interviewing people then, that you can kind of have an empathy for them when they're trying to overcome barriers?
Yeah, definitely. And I think like a lot of people, no matter who you are, you've gone through struggles in life, overcome adversity. And I've interviewed people that have gone through sickness or maybe had an accident like myself or something, but I think what I went through, I can empathise more, and I can always relate to a listener when they're telling their story. So it's definitely something that has opened up my eyes, and you kind of see the world different and appreciate things more as well.
Yeah, so let's go back, tell people about your story. You mentioned the accident there. Just before the accident, tell people what you were like, what age were you, and kind of, I suppose, you were living a normal teenage life?
Yeah, I was, before the accident, I done my junior cert, and it was just, 2 days after my birthday, the accident happened. I was just a regular teenager going out with his friends, cycling and playing soccer and always outdoors really in Killarney and Muckross, and I suppose just the typical teenager. And on the 14th of August was my birthday, I turned 16, and then 2 days later I had my accident in Muckross in Killarney. Fell off my bike when I was cycling, went down a a hill and hit a log and the front wheel of my bike. I went over the handlebars about 8 feet and broke 4 bones in my neck and severed my spinal cord, and was paralysed then from the shoulders down, and lucky enough I'm getting a bit of movement back now in the arm slowly but surely.
Yeah, it's actually great, as you were saying, that you moved, you know, your arms, shoulders. It's brilliant to see. I've heard this story numerous times, but it's never been not shocking to hear. Like, so something so simple can happen. Like,
yeah, I suppose it was a hill that I went down every day in Muckers. It was cut. It was grass. It was for people cycling down and walking down, and they had cut the trees, and the log was left on the path, and it had just overgrown with grass, and I suppose a little did I know that day I wouldn't be going back up the hill. It was pure, just if I was another foot or two to the left, I wouldn't have hit it, and I suppose that's life. And, you know, like I always say, crying isn't going to make me walk again, so I always say, like, I suppose just simple things happen in life, and it's kind of more how you react to these things that plays a bigger part in the, I suppose, the accident itself.
You're a very philosophical person, and you always have kind of this positive outlook. Had you that before the accident, or was that something you developed, like a thick skin or a layer after the accident?
I suppose I always kind of looked on the positive side of things before my accident. I was always a glass half full, like they say, instead of half empty. But no, it was something that I was always positive, but when this happened to me, I think I had no choice only to be positive and to show a bit of courage and kind of come a bit more about me. And I suppose all the obstacles that I knew were ahead of me, I had no option. And people always say to me, how are you so positive and strong-minded? And I always say to them, I think everybody is positive and has that courage. You just have to, I suppose, dig deep enough to find it, and that's what my accident brought out in me.
Yeah, this series is like for young people to learn from older people. You're kind of an older person now. You were younger then. Do you think because you were younger that kind of helped you in a way? Do you know, to be a bit more positive and look at the world in a better way?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that I seen a quote the last day. It was like, when you're looking at positive side of things, it's like a picture. You just have to zoom out a bit and look at things in a different perspective. And I think my accident definitely done that for me. And I think especially at a young age, it has set me up for things in life. I've achieved more, Joe, since my accident in 2017 than I would have in my whole life before my accident. And I think happening at such a young age, things are going on. You're still in school, you're growing up, you're friends, and, you know, you're at that age when you're just before you're 18 and you're kind of still developing as a teenager. And when it happened smack bang in the middle of that, it was, I suppose, it was something that definitely gave me that courage at a young age to be the person that I am today.
Mm. When someone tells you you're paralysed, like, what way does that news hit you straight away? Do you comprehend it, or what way is it?
I suppose at the start, when I remember, I'll never forget, when I was in the matter after my accident, I was there on the ventilator for 4 months, and I was in rehab in Dunleary for 5 months. But I'll never forget the day the nurse came into my room, Joe, and said, we're going to measure you for a wheelchair. And I remember I just kind of looked at her, and I had myself convinced that I'd be walking again in 2 weeks' time, that it was just a fall. But no, when I hear that I'm paralysed, it's always something that's going to hit a nerve, and something that always, it might sound weird now, but a lot of people, if you ask them if they could go back to the life they had beforehand, some people would say, no, I love the life I have now. And that's me. Obviously, I'd love to get up and walk again, but I couldn't be more grateful for the life that I have now, doing things, I suppose, getting a job here in Radio Kerry and working in radio. It's I love the life that I live now.
Yeah. What's very strange is, as we're talking, and I know you very well, you're smiling away all the time. Like, you're telling such a difficult story, but you're smiling away. Like, you've such a positive outlook on things. So have you ever been afraid during this whole process?
Definitely. A lot of times. And it's something that I think men and boys sometimes find hard to open up and talk about. But I was definitely afraid, I suppose, when I... The first time I knew when I was afraid was when I was on the ventilator, and my nurse told me that when I come off that, I'll be going to Dunleary. And it was a week before Christmas I came off the ventilator, and they were going moving me straight to Dunleary for rehab. And I was absolutely terrified of going into a new environment. Number one, you're just off the ventilator. Number two, I was going around Christmas time to a new environment. But that was definitely one of the times that I was afraid. And being on the ventilator, that was very scary. Like, I was told I'd be on it for life, and I came off it after 80 days. But wow. That was the first time that I really felt scared in life after my accident. I suppose that was the first time that I really kind of was afraid of what was next.
Mm. And how did you deal with it over the months then, the way things developed? Was it like every day, treat every day as it comes? Or did you set goals? Or how did you overcome it?
Yeah, a bit of both, I suppose, one day at a time. Especially when I was in Dunleary, I'll never forget, there was something on the floor, and Mick, he was one of the healthcare assistants there. I asked him, it was something that was on the floor and that I wanted to pick up. And I asked him to pick it up, and he said, "Ian, this is a rehab facility, not a nursing home." And that was the first time I said, right, this is down to me. Can't be relying on other people, obviously you physios and stuff. And it was from that conversation I had with him on that I kind of started setting goals. And one day at a time, you got your week planner at the start of the week, what days you had physio, what days you had going to the therapy pool. And I think long-term goals are good, but short-term goal setting is just as important. And I think that goes for anybody in any walk of life. I think setting goals is something that, and I like to say, like, if your dreams don't scare you, they're not big enough. I find that a very, I suppose, good thing to say.
Were you ever told you can't do something?
Yeah, I suppose the ventilator again. They told me I'd be on it for life, and I remember I looked at them and I said, "Watch me." And I suppose that was the first time I've been told loads of times that I wouldn't. I've been told that I wouldn't get movement back in my hands, and that's coming slowly but surely. But I love when people tell me I can't do something just to prove them wrong. I love that. And I think there's so many people out there that look on that side of things saying you're not going to be able to do it, but nobody knows your own body like you do. Just because somebody that had a similar spinal cord injury to me wasn't able to do that, they automatically think that I won't be able to, or the next person won't be able to. So on several occasions, and I think it's good to prove people wrong.
Now Ian is going to stay with us because we're going to go to break, and we're going to hear more from Ian after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee.
Now you're listening to a very special programme this morning. It's part of our Lessons in Awe series, funded by Cumasún na mBan with the television licence fee. This morning we're talking about courage, and my guest is Ian O'Connell.
Like, you talk about the exercise and you go to the gym and everything, but do you almost have to exercise your brain? Because your recovery is not a straight line, I'd imagine. There's lots of different complications probably that we know nothing about, and you have to overcome those barriers all the time.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the brain and the mental side of thing is another thing. Like, sometimes it can be just as hard as the physical side of your recovery. And I've been very lucky with my accident, that my mental health has been very good since. I've never needed any therapy or anything, which is not something to say that's brilliant. That if I needed it, I'd 100% do it. And it's important for people to know that is something that is important. And sometimes, especially men, they find it hard to take that step into things. But the mental side of things in my recovery was a big thing too, and I think my friends and family played a huge part. And I suppose especially at a young age, like we said there a minute ago, My friends, they were unbelievable. My mum was beside my bed for the 9 months in hospital, and my dad was up and down from Killarney. He was working away, but no, definitely the friends and family definitely helped the mental side of things, because it can be just as hard as the physical side sometimes.
Yeah, you've a great relationship with your parents, don't you?
Massive.
Yeah.
They're, I don't know, like, what words I could say to describe how much they've been a part of my life since my, obviously before my accident, but since my accident, they've, like, I wouldn't be a quarter of the man I am today without them, you know.
Mm.
And friends as well with them, you know, they're all one, and it's that's something that played a huge part in getting me to where I am today.
Yeah, because it changed our life as well, didn't it? Yeah.
Of course, yeah, we had to move house and everything, like, and it was like, not just changed my life, but obviously there's moving house and all that as well. But no, they've been very, very good, and you know, they're always there, you know, if I need them, and they're my biggest supporters. If there's something that I want to do that they don't agree with, they'll back me in a way, either way.
Yeah, we're talking about bravery and courage, and you show that in abundance, but I think a great side of you as well is you have a wicked sense of humour as well.
Yeah,
definitely. Probably, you have to depend on that as well.
Yeah, 100%. I think that sense of humour is huge. Do you know, I'm always cracking jokes about I can be out watching a game of football and the lads will be warming up and then one of them get injured, I'd say I'll come on and play full forward, you know. But a sense of humour is a huge thing, and that's what helped me as well sometimes get out of tough situations, you know. If I'm having a bad day, that sense of humour can definitely get me out of a bit of a rut if there is a day that I'm having a tough day. But I think it helps a lot, and I suppose in anyone's life a bit of sense of humour, I don't take life too seriously, and I don't think anybody should, because, you know, we never know what's around the corner.
Mm. There's a danger, I was just thinking there, talking to you about saying before the accident, after the accident. That shouldn't be how your life is defined. And you're going, like, there's several chapters in your life, isn't there? You mentioned the broadcasting. You do motivational speaking. You've got to go around the world. You're doing lots of different things. Tell people about the positive aspects about all that as well.
Yeah, I suppose, like you said, I do a lot of talks around I've been able to travel around the world. I've got to meet people that I'd only have dreamt about meeting, whether it be sports people on TV. You know, I've get to do talks around schools in Ireland and obviously the broadcasting. I love that, and I've gotten opportunities to go and see different sporting events that I definitely wouldn't have gotten to see before my accident. But there is a lot of positives that has come out of my accident. I definitely wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for my accident. It's opened up my eyes a lot to I suppose see that how quick life can change.
Mm.
And that's something that really stood out for me.
Mm.
And to appreciate the smallest things, whether it be scratching your nose, or like at the start when I had no movements at all, it could be 2 o'clock in the morning and I'd be saying, "Dad, come down, scratch my nose." But it's in little things, Joe, that people don't see. Like,
my,
you know,
nose even get itchy and you saying that, and yeah, not being able to scratch it all.
Yeah,
them
small things.
Torture, yeah. You mentioned small things, and some people have challenges in life that are small and others are bigger, but then it can be all relative. You know, you could be in school, for instance, as a teenager, and there could be someone in the class that might be mean to you or whatever, and looking back and you might think it was a small thing, but at that time it could be a massive thing. So, like, bullying is a problem in school for teenagers and for young people, and they have other challenges. It could be, you know, body image or anything like that. What advice would you have to people like that to overcome their challenges and to kind of, I suppose, to build up that resilience and to summon that courage and bravery?
Definitely, and like you said there, body image, it's a huge thing these days, and I think what has a huge part to play in that kind of thing is social media. We see these, whether it be, I know I've cousins, girls that are growing up, they're younger, they're looking at the famous people online, and they feel that they have to be like them, or at a young age, you know, you are looking at these people and you're kind of relating yourself to them. which is something that obviously shouldn't be happening. But bullying is another thing, like you said, George. You know, if somebody said something to me, I'd stand up for myself always. And I think anybody should stand up for themselves, you know.
And you've got that. You've got online trolls and things.
Yeah.
Saying disgusting stuff, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's my social media blew up like after I was on the Late Late Show. And I remember when I suppose getting the followers and stuff, it's only a matter of time until you see a comment. And sometimes you could get 100 comments on your post that would be all positive, and then there could be one negative. And sometimes I'm lucky enough that it's water off a duck's back for me. But I've talked to a lot of people. I had a girl on my show there last week, Celine Byrne, the opera singer. She said that one negative comment on her social media, she focuses on that instead of the 100 positive comments. And I think social media is a big thing these days for young people in particular.
But to concentrate on the positives, concentrate on what you have.
Yeah, 100%. I suppose I always say, kind of concentrate and appreciate what you have until it becomes the things that you had.
Yeah.
I think that is a big thing for me. Like I used to take the smallest things for granted, and it's only since I went through my own adversity that it has opened up my eyes.
And I suppose finally, and you've kind of mentioned this, but courage and bravery, and we mentioned males in particular, but I think anyone, to be able to talk, it takes courage to say something, to tell someone something if it's bothering or whatever. That's probably a big piece of advice.
Yeah, 100%. I suppose if you don't talk to somebody, it's going to build up in your own head. It's going to be a weight on your shoulders. And I think that, I suppose, if you need to ask for help, absolutely nothing wrong with that. There's been times I've texted my friends if I'm having a bad day, and my friends know me better than I know myself these days, Joe. If I'm having a bad day, and they'd say, "What's wrong?" And I'd say, "Nothing." And they'd say, "Ian, what's wrong?" They know me. And it's in that situation that asking for help and talking to a friend, especially as young people, George, you know, you've a lot of things going on in your own head. And I'm an overthinker. I overthink everything. Even when I started the radio course, I was like, I can't use my hands. How am I going to use my desk? And I remember yourself and Connie, like you were saying, that there's ways around everything. But opening up and I suppose asking for help is the first step. That's the hardest part, is reaching out at the start, compared to, I suppose, when you do talk to somebody, reaching out is the hardest part. And I think it's the most important part, especially for young people, to talk to each other. And, you know, it's good to have a friend that you can trust. Like, I can count on my fingers the amount of people that I can really trust, you know. And it's important to have them things in life, and to have people like that, you know, in your life that you can turn to when things are bad, and maybe you want to show a bit of courage but you find it hard to express it. It's good to have people that you can turn to, that you know will listen, and it'll stay between you.
Yeah. Well, continued success. You continue to show bravery and courage, trying something new all the time, which I think is absolutely brilliant. It was an absolute pleasure having you as a student as well, Ian, and continued success with your programme. If people want to tune in, where do they go?
Wednesday night, 8 to 9 p.m. On Radio Kerry.
Excellent. Ian O'Connell, thanks a million for talking to me.
No bother, Joe.
Now we're going to take a break, and we'll hear more stories of courage after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney. Serving the finest seafood in a cosy, modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
Now, I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. This morning on the programme, we have a very special programme. It's part of our Lessons in Awe series, where we are now going to be talking about lessons in courage. And I'm delighted to say we have some very special young guests on with us this morning from Kerry, Corlin and Og. We have Brendan, Clodagh and Malvina, and they're going to tell their own stories. And Malvina, I'll start with yourself. Tell us about your story. You were homeless for a while.
I was homeless for just over a year, and it affected me in a lot of ways. Like, for example, when I was homeless, I was in third year, so I was sitting my junior year. So I didn't get much study done for the junior cert. I managed to pass everything, but it wasn't the best scores.
And how did it affect your confidence, for instance?
My confidence went down for a while I was homeless, because I didn't know what I was doing.
And how did it, how did you deal with it?
I talked with my mom. We were like, thankfully we were all together. We got moved around accommodations. We were all together.
And do your friends help in that situation, Malvina?
My friends were really helpful. Especially, I joined Corla when I was homeless.
Okay.
That really helped me a lot. It helped me boost up my confidence, public speaking, and it helped me make friends.
Excellent. And how are you now?
I am very well. We've been living in a house for 5 months and it's really good.
Do you think you became more courageous over the last few months?
Definitely.
And are you more confident now?
Way more confident. I'm willing to speak up about the way it was when I was homeless, so people can see that we're all still people and that they shouldn't be afraid to speak up about what has happened.
Excellent, Malvina. Thanks a million for telling your story.
No bother. Thank you for having me.
And also another Corlan and Og member we have is Brendan. So, Brendan, tell us your story. It's more to do, I suppose, with trying to fit in, is it?
Yeah, so I guess really growing up is just me and my mom, and thankfully we did have a large, loving family to support us. But the problem with that is when you spend so much time around so many people who are older than you, you become, at such a young age, you become so used to speaking to adults that you struggle heavily with speaking to people your own age. And I found during primary school, I found it very, very hard to fit in with people my own age. And it didn't help that I was, because I went to a country school and that was mad for sports. So it didn't help that I wasn't the most athletically gifted. I spent most of my time reading and watching movies and playing games and all that. So yeah, I was able to make friends, but I found socializing, and I struggled with being able to meet up with them at times as well.
And how did you overcome that?
Basically, when I went into secondary school in second year, the guidance counselor in the school, Miss Niamh Moran, absolute lovely woman, she pulled me, basically pulled me into a classroom, and she sat me down and she taught me that she told me all about Corla, and she taught me how she's taken a notice to my interests in law and politics, and that she thinks it'd be really good for my confidence and being able to speak. And luckily I listened to her, and when I joined Corla I realized I wasn't really that different, that I could fit in, that I hadn't really found my people yet. And going into Corla, it's great because you're basically going into a room with all your best friends. And for once, I feel like I can speak to people about things, and it has really helped my confidence, and it's really helped my ability to speak. Like, for a long time, I struggled to speak to people, and Corla helped that. And I think I know from me speaking to people that it's a big problem that a lot of people not being able to fit in, even if they are more similar to others. It's always, I think, loneliness is always going to be there. It's just important to know that you are seen, and there is people you can go to, and there is people who will watch out for you and who will listen to you and who will hear you out. But yeah.
And do you think that's an important piece of advice to young people listening that might have felt the way you were feeling, that they might be feeling it now?
Yeah. Really all I could tell them is that you just have to hold out, really. You have to you have to, I know it can be hard and to speak about your problems, because at times you feel like they don't matter if many people don't speak to you, or if you just struggle to make friends. But there's always going to be a parent or a teacher or anyone who's willing to listen. You just have to, I guess, open your eyes a small bit.
Well, Brendan, you've an inspirational story to tell, and you can see in your, or hear in your voice, how confident you've become. And now you're speaking about it on radio, so that's absolutely fantastic. You should be commended. Brendan, thanks a million for telling your story.
Thank you so much.
And now we're going to speak to Clodagh. And Clodagh, you had a kind of a really heavy experience when you were very young. 5 years of age, you had a kidney transplant. Tell us about that.
So I got diagnosed with kidney failure at 5, and I was on dialysis for 12 hours a night for 7 days a week for a total of 18 months. And I was also on a fluid restriction, which made me not be able to like drink a lot of water and stuff like that. I had a feeder tube, so that would kind of compensate for my water.
Oh my God. And you can remember all that clearly, even though you were 5 years of age?
Yes.
And how were you able to get through that time? Was it just that it was a normal thing to you because you were so young and you were used to it, or what was it like?
I got used to it over time. I think I really, like, got with it as, like, the doctors were helping me and my parents and my family.
Hmm.
They were helping me, and it kind of just became like normal life to me.
Mm.
I was up to Dublin every like second day after my transplant.
Mm.
So.
And do you think it kind of made you stronger in life, that experience?
Yes, as like, it was like a big part of my life, the kidney.
Mm.
And there was a lot of problems with the kidney because I got a lot of scares that it might be going again.
Whoa.
And like, especially this year, I got one there recently during my November assessment.
Whoa.
And it was like the scariest like moment, because it's like I'm almost 10 years now with my new kidney.
Mm.
And I just really don't want to lose it. So all I know is I just have to mind myself.
Hmm. And how do you overcome that fear? Like, do you just distract yourself with other things?
Yeah. Like, I joined Corla because I wanted to make some friends and have a distraction from going to hospital every 8 weeks.
Yeah.
It's a really big help.
And how are you now?
I'm really good. As I said, I'm going on 10 years with it now, so I'm very proud of myself.
Yeah, and so you should be, and I'd say your family are too. Thanks a million for telling us your story, Clodagh.
Thank you for having me on.
And enjoy Corla. And like, tell us about Corla. What, like, I'd imagine it's kind of a new outlet to make new friends, is it?
Yeah, but it also kind of brings out like your confidence and your talking.
Yeah.
I feel like I have more confidence in my speaking abilities now.
Yeah, excellent. And that comes across here this morning on the radio. So well done, Clodagh. Thanks a million for telling us your story, and continued good health to you.
Thank you.
Now we're going to take a break. We'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
Niamh Daly sat down and interviewed Nisha Lade and Evie Barrick, two incredible nine-year-olds, about courage, friendship and bravery. Nisha was just two, nearly three, when he was first diagnosed with a rare sarcoma cancer. And last year, Evie was diagnosed with severe aplastic anemia, a rare blood condition that meant she needed a bone marrow transplant. They've both faced things most kids never have to. Yet, through it all, they've shown remarkable strength. What's more, they've supported each other, helped each other, understand what it was like, and today they're here to share their story. Here is Many Voices, One Kingdom, told in their own words, with a chat to follow with Niamh.
Hi, my name is Evie, and this is my friend Nisha.
Hi.
We're only 8 and 9, but some days it feels like we live lifetimes.
We met in junior infants. Everyone else just saw two kids playing, being silly. Nobody knew I had already had a rare type of cancer when I was only 2 turning 3. Chemo, proton therapy in Germany. I couldn't walk, I couldn't talk. I had to learn everything all over again.
I didn't know any of that at the start. You just seemed brave, kind, funny. But then, last year, I got bruises that wouldn't go away. My blood counts collapsed. They told me I needed a bone marrow transplant, that something rare and frightening was happening inside me.
That's when she started asking me things about hospital beds that beep all night, about tubes and needles and chemo.
And when I got my Hickman line, he told me all the stories about his one. It made me feel less scared and less alone. When I had to stay in hospital for weeks, we used to video call all the time, and he always knew what to say because he'd been through it too.
And I did mean it. I was only 3, but I remember the hospital, the treatments, and even flying on the president's jet to Germany.
I spent months in Glasgow, far from school, far from friends. Sometimes it felt like the world got small, but I held on to something. That if Nisha made it through everything he went through, maybe I could too.
And seeing Evie fight made me understand my own journey better. Like I wasn't alone anymore.
We were lucky. Lucky to have family, lucky to have each other, and lucky to still be here.
Because the truth is, not every kid gets the chance we got. But every child who fights, no matter the outcome, is a warrior.
I'm back in school now, back playing, back laughing. And maybe that's the real miracle, that after everything, we still get to be kids.
If you're listening, please remember, not every child's path is easy, but every child's courage is real.
And with me in studio right now are the voices of two of the most bravest young people I've ever met. It is Evie and Niamh. You both spoke so honestly there. Now, hearing your story played back like that, I know it was only just a snippet of it. Evie, we'll start with you. How does it feel?
It feels good being able to know how similar me and Niamh's story was.
When you first started to feel a little sick, how did it all happen and what was the conversation that you had with your mom?
Well, I was wearing this necklace and it's like the bumps started going on my neck. So me and my dad were like, it's just from the necklace. And then she actually took me in.
Okay, so in a sense, you were lucky that you were wearing that necklace.
Yeah.
So tell me how your journey went then after that.
Well, it started with I went up to Dublin and I was in an ambulance. And fun fact, the ambulance only took like 2 hours and 30 minutes just to get up to Dublin.
Wow. They were getting you to hospital quick.
Mm-hmm.
Being away from your friends and having to go to another country, what was the hardest thing other than feeling sick?
My dad would come in because my mom would stay with me, but I would end up being asleep. So I would wake up and be like, does dad come yet? And then she would be like, okay, well, you were asleep. So I'd be pretty disappointed about that. But then the good thing was that like I could call people. I knew people that I could call, like play with online and stuff. So that just made it better.
So one of those people is sitting right beside you, Niamh. Niamh, what did it feel like when you heard that Evie was sick in hospital?
It felt a bit weird, honestly. I was like, one of my friends is in hospital experiencing the same thing as I did.
And how was that for you?
Well, it's fine now that she's better, but it was only me, Stevie and Faye. We made our communion and we thought Evie would stay in second class because she didn't make her communion.
And she didn't, did she?
No.
She was able to move on with you, which was lovely, isn't it?
Yeah.
What was it like, Evie, when you were able to have phone calls with Niamh?
It was great, like, because beforehand I would, like, have nobody to play with. I would be all by myself, like, no kids around. So it was great that I was able to call Niamh and we were able to talk through the phone calls and all of those.
Niamh, your story is a little different because you were 2 going on 3 when all this happened to you. And you said that you do remember some things. Tell me what you do remember from that.
Well, I remember Oisin, my brother. He was going up and down the plane like mad.
This is the plane that you were going over to Germany in. It was the president's jet.
Uh-huh. It was cool to know that in life I was in the president's jet by myself.
And this all happened during COVID, so they needed to get you to Germany. So do you know that you've gone on a big journey of bravery and courage?
Yeah.
What do you think bravery really is?
Well, I think it's you're not scared of anything.
And do people say that you were brave and courageous?
Yeah, literally, I get that comment all the time. That's the one comment I get most.
And how does that make you feel?
Happy, I guess.
And do you think that Evie was brave in her journey?
Yeah, because she had to like cut open her skin to like get the bone out and then replace it.
Yeah, and that's hard, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I don't want my skin cut open.
It's good that you didn't remember some of the things that you had to go through, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So, Evie, you showed a lot of bravery and a lot of courage on your journey. How did that bravery and courage keep you going?
Well, I knew it was not going to be on forever. Eventually, it would be done, and eventually, I was going to be able to get out of hospital. And I was being very brave, and that kept me going.
The both of you, you kind of understand each other in a way that not many kids do. What's special about having a friend who kind of gets it and has been through the same thing?
Well, I still think she's normal because I have been through it as well. So I'm like, oh, she's the same as me, so she's normal. And sometimes, like, she knows if I say I had a Freddy, she knows what that is.
And tell us, what is a Freddy?
Freddy is like the central line, but it's a better name because like it's easier for kids rather than saying central line.
And Anish, I think you gave that name to Evie, did you?
Yeah, I did.
And how did you feel when you were like, okay, we're going to call it Freddy?
I felt good.
Less scared, maybe?
Yeah.
Was there something that helped you on your hard days?
My brother and sister. My brother used to always cheer me up.
That's nice. Coming into the hospital, is it?
Uh-huh. Because Oshin came over when I was at the hospital bed, and he just used to always play with me.
That's the same for me. Like, my brother helped me a lot. I'd be, like, watching videos because I missed him a lot. I was in hospital for 3 months, and I basically hadn't seen him for, like, 3 whole months in person.
Oh, that's so lovely. If you had any bit of advice for a kid that is sick or in hospital at the moment, what would it be?
Definitely never give up, never doubt yourself, never think, like, I'm not going to make it through. As long as you're brave, it doesn't matter because you still tried.
I think also you can be scared in that, but it's okay to be scared and still be brave, isn't it?
Yeah, being scared is part of being brave.
Exactly. Do you think going through something hard changes who you are?
Not fully. It may change a little, but you'll never change. You're always going to be yourself, even if you go through something. Like, just because I have shorter hair now, just because I went through something and I have to go to doctor's appointments, that doesn't mean I'm not Evie.
Yeah, which is really lovely, because you'll always be Evie. What about you, Niche?
Yeah, it makes you change. It makes you be braver, honestly, because you know you went through something brave that it needs bravery, so then you can go through anything, practically.
And that's really important message to have within yourself and to give out to the world.
Yeah.
Well, I think sometimes people think courage is loud and big, but today we've learned it can be very quiet. It can be a hospital appointment. It can be showing your friend something that makes you nervous. It can be coming into a radio studio and telling your story. And not every child has to walk this path, but every child who does carries the strength that stays with them. Evie and Nisha, you are proof that you can be small, but still very, very mighty. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, what a beautiful interview there, conducted by Niamh Daly with Nisha and Evie. And we wish them all the success in the world. We're going to take a break for the news at 10, and I'll join you again in the next hour.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
Now, I hope you're enjoying the programme so far. And as you're well aware, now the programme this morning, it's a very special one. It's part of our series Lessons in Awe, supported by Cumann na Shún na Mban with television licence fee, and it's all about I suppose educating young people and young people educating their elders as well. And we've had different episodes all along. We've had a community episode, a nature episode, a play episode, and they're all going to be going out over the coming weeks on Radio Kerry. But this is kind of kicking things off. And today we're focusing on courage. And you have heard various contributors' wonderful stories about courage and bravery and resilience. And to get a more professional viewpoint, no stranger to Radio Kerry and always very helpful in projects we've been involved with, is child and adolescent psychotherapist specialising in play therapy, Adele Lawler. Adele, you're very welcome. How are you this morning?
I'm very good. Thank you, Joe, for having me. I'm always very excited to come to Radio Kerry.
Yeah.
Be part of your project, so all good.
Yeah. And, you know, in relation to what we're talking about this morning, bravery, resilience, courage, how do you, as, you know, how does a child develop those things? Do they almost have to learn by experience, or the ways that they can be developed?
You know, that's a very good question. And I suppose that's one of the things that a lot of parents, you know, when they come to the centre, is that, you know, I just want my child to be more resilient, or, you know, to have some more courage, or, you know, they've been through an awful lot. And it is one of the things is that, you know, monkey see, monkey do as well. You know, so children definitely, you know, watch their elders, watch the wiser people and what they believe as being courageous. You know, so for kids, when they come here, I always, you know, highlight, you know, you haven't met me before and you've come into the centre and you're so brave. You know, so even starting something new. So often why we look for these amazing stories, and there's many out there which we both know. Sometimes it's like it's helping children to understand courage is actually starting school. Mm. Courage is saying goodbye to, you know, their preschool teacher, you know. So, and often then is that, you know, children do need to be more courageous, particularly around medical trauma or lifelong illnesses, or working with children where there's a cancer diagnosis, particularly when it has to be, you know, where there's hospitalizations, or, you know, to show courage where, you know, sadly, where maybe somebody in their family is dying of an illness. So courage is something that you can't really teach. It's about highlighting when it appears.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, yeah. And I think often we think of courage, you know, back in like our fairy tale days of the knight rushing against the dragon and that kind of courage, but it's not necessarily that. And I suppose everyone's situation can be different. What's small to one person could be massive to the next person.
And I'll give you an example of that. So just to give you an idea how we might help a child to understand their own courage, or how we might encourage their courageous responses. So a little girl is coming to therapy and she's been through an awful lot, you know, without going into any details, where, you know, she was harmed and, you know, appropriate services were involved and she ends up coming into therapy. But I had the most amazing last session with her where actually she, you know, came in and she said, let's have a snowball fight. And I said, OK, we're going to have a safe snowball fight. And of course, we bring in the fight, but it's a safe snowball fight. And that's really about children experiencing a safe impact. So sword fighting, you know, snowball fights. And I said, so she said, you can be the villain. And I said, OK, I'm going to be the villain. And I turn into the villain and then she's the warrior. So what we have here is that we have a child embodying a courage feeling. And what I said to her, I said, OK, so I'm the villain and you're not going to tell anybody that I'm trying to steal this treasure. OK, so metaphorically, that's given the story, you know, it's telling her story. And I said, you're not even going to ring someone. You're not even going to tell a safe adult. And of course, she picks up the play telephone. She goes, I'm ringing the guards. You're not going to do that. And look at you. You're just giving so much, you know, bravery here now. And like after about 6 or 7 months working with a child who was harmed, who couldn't find a voice, but eventually did, you know. In therapy, we highlight those moments of bravery. So it's not sitting down talking to a child about, you know, this is how you be courageous, this is how you show courage. It's in their play. And while she's throwing these snowballs at me and I'm the bad villain and she's ringing the guards in the middle of the playroom, I'm saying, oh no, you just knew exactly what to do. Look at you getting help there now, knowing. She goes, now I'm going to lock you up. Of course, I'm handcuffed then and I'm thrown into the corner of the playroom. And she's just celebrating. And then I'm peeking. You're so courage. You have so much courage. You're so brave. And like, Joe, I suppose that's what happens in a therapy room, particularly when children find, you know, I suppose, situations in their life that are really, really difficult. Right. Mm. You know, as therapists, we help them to discover their own courageous responses, right? So, you know, so that's a storage of courage that I think is just amazing. It really is amazing. But sometimes, you know, it's the little things that children do, you know, where parents kind of go, wow, you were so brave. I know it was really difficult for you to go into, you know, football today, or, you know, you went to the doctors and I know you didn't like that pick. That was really brave, you know. But also it's OK for children to understand not all times do I have courage because I'm only a kid as well. You know, and I think that's one of the things I think that's important. I mean, as adults, I mean, you know, it's sometimes it's hard for us as adults to have courage.
Yeah.
You know, and this whole idea is that, you know, years ago, I remember setting up my private practice in 2004. And, you know, someone said to me, oh, you set my business. He did. And I said, I am. I said, I'm play therapy. She goes, ah, stop. They'll think of anything now.
Oh, jeez.
imagine children needing therapy, right? So this is in 2004. So children are resilient, right? And they are and they're not. And I mean, that is that they, you know, sometimes people will say, you know, they're not that bothered because they're playing. That's a coping mechanism. They're not adults. They're not going to sit down and say, I'm really stressed today. I'm really upset today. They will show the world that they're fine. So what we think is that they're really resilient, where of course we know that they're not. Do you know, so it's a little bit of kind of back and forth about are children resilient or they're not? They are and they aren't. Do you know, and I think that's one of the things. And as I say to parents, you know, parents will say to me, Edel, I just want my children to be happy. I always say, no, we don't want them to be happy. We don't want them to be happy all the time.
Yeah.
You know, we need them to actually have moments where they're courageous. We need them to be brave. We need them to be bored. We need them to be sad. We also need them to experience anger. All part of being human, Joe.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very important point that you've made. You know what struck me as well when you're talking about play therapy? It's a fascinating world, but it's kind of the medium of which therapy is delivered. And, you know, I was thinking about the men's shed there, like, and often they open up when they're like, you know, at a craft with someone else, they'll start to talk about something or about isolation or something like that. It's kind of that kind of, it's almost not a distraction technique, but it's a way to get it out, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you see, kids are not coming in here and they're not sitting down inside in the room and saying, Dad, I'm really sad because, you know, my dad died, or I'm really sad because, you know, I didn't get the results of my leaving cert, or whatever the case is that we're making slime, we're using puppets, we're playing sword fights. You know, sometimes parents, when, you know, I come out, they'll say, what are you doing in there? You know, so sometimes people think kids come into therapy and they talk. Birds fly, fish swim, children play.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how they use metaphors to tell their story. They, you know, like my morning could consist of fighting a two-headed dragon, jumping out of a helicopter. I mean, it's amazing, really. I mean, you have no idea really what I do, to being a villain, to being a superhero. But in all that, I'm working with children with anxiety. I'm working with children who've been abused. I'm working with children where they've been bereavement, you know, where children feel isolated, loneliness, where they've been with addiction. Like, I think that's the world that, you know, that I know, but I see courage every single day in my playroom.
Yeah.
You know, from the 3-year-old to the 17-year-old to the adult with intellectual disabilities. And I was involved with a project with yourselves, the Hidden Life Project, you know, with the students there from the course. And I can say that story is listened to every week in my playroom.
Yeah. And remind people about that.
Yeah, so the Hidden Life Project is that I was involved with yourselves and the Kerry College with the journalists there.
Yeah.
We all came together and we created the story, looking at, you know, bringing in wisdom to children and about children showing courage. And these three kids, Fiona, Saoirse and Keane, went on a journey. Pearl, the Queen of the Fairies, was there, was the camp leader. And they went to Three Peaks in Kerry, to Carron Tool, to Fianna Lighthouse and to the Kerry Cliffs. And they had to find three crystals in diverse situations. And we looked at, I suppose, kind of metaphors among Kerry and how children could be brave. So we had one child where, I suppose, they had gone through, you know, an extremely difficult medical condition. Another little girl whose her brother was autistic. And then somebody with high anxiety who may have experienced bullying as well. So the story is all done through metaphors. And they find three crystals, and at the top of Carron Tool, then they put the crystals together to find this treasure. And of course, the treasure is a mirror. So while kids are looking outside, and you know, it was amazing, the feedback. I mean, the beautiful comments that we got. If you look at Radio Kerry page and go down along the comments, you know, I'm online tomorrow, Joe, and I'll have 25 students from all over Ireland, and sometimes international students as well. And one of the first things that we do on the day course is that we listen to the Hidden Light Project. And they get them, like, it's like, I don't think, you know, the way that we use it in the play therapy world is amazing. And in the therapy room here, every child gets a mirror. And while they're listening to the story, they're designing the mirror. And at the very end, then throughout the story, I drop a crystal every time there's a crystal found. And of course, they're delighted because they get these crystals. And at the end of the story, then I lift up the mirror and they get to see themselves. And it's just amazing. Like, I would highly recommend that story. You know, even this time of the year, you know, fabulous, fabulous story to listen to in schools, get children to do artwork. And I think it's one of the gems of Kerry. This story is definitely a gem of Kerry. I'd love to see it in an animation as well. Mm. So a beautiful project to get involved with yourselves. You know, so, and I, and again, I go back to it is that, you know, children, you know, we're expecting these amazing stories around courage, you know, but sometimes it's the little things where children start to learn about courage, start to learn about bravery. And one of the things I say to parents as well, Joe, is that while our instinct is, let's put on a mommy superhero cape or a daddy superhero cape and let's fix this.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't invited to the birthday party. Well, I'm going to bring you to Smith's now and buy you a present. No, no. What you do is that you just listen. That was really hard. You know, it's really difficult. You weren't invited to the birthday party, but that, because that's life.
Yeah.
Right. You know, while we're trying to fix it, we're not helping children to be resilient.
Yeah. There's a lot of common sense in that, isn't there?
You see, Joe, this, like, we go back to the wisdom of the elders, and, you know, again, being involved in this project, you know, like, our parents were amazing, and our grandparents, right? They had this natural remedy. They had no training in psychology. They weren't online on webinars, you know, how do I support my children's emotional intelligence? There was nothing like that, right? Mm. But they had this natural instinct. When you went in home and you complained about something, someone hit you, someone called you a name, you weren't invited, or whatever the case may be, our elders said, will you ever go out and play?
Mm.
And what did we do? We went out and we played. We don't do that anymore because there's this, you know, there's this fear that we have. There's more traffic on the roads. There's less of a community, I suppose, togetherness that we see. You know, I think a lot of people don't actually, even I'm constantly on about it, I don't think a lot of parents or and even professionals realize, you know, the importance of play. If children are struggling with something, they need to play because they'll work it out.
Mm.
You know, they will work out, you know, the situation. And it's not always a play therapist that's needed, even though that's my job.
Mm.
Do you know, it's not always a play therapist. It's actually, you know, mom or dad, or it's playtime, or it's, you know, again, you know, as the weather starts to get better, like, how amazing to get into the car, listen to the Hidden Light Project and travel to those places in Kerry. Bring a picnic. It doesn't matter if it's raining. Like, that's what children will remember. And I know a lot of the parents here are actually have done that. They've gone and they've looked for the phoenix in the Kerry cliffs and stuff. So, like, you know, I suppose it's going back to the wisdom of the elders. And I think, you know, I've said this so many times. When children are stressed, you know, when there's we want to do something for them, it's that they need to be with us. We need to have a little bit of playtime. We don't need the holiday to Florida. We don't need that. Well, of course, that's lovely, you know, but kids will remember the picnic. They will remember getting wet. They will remember, you know, going to Phoenix for, you know, for a walk. They're the things that they will remember, is that no stress from parents and that playfulness.
Yeah. And what about the importance of mentors and, you know, adults, you know, giving positive reinforcement, not faint praise now or, you know, flattery, but, you know, kind of supporting a young person when they do something, you know, that is courageous to them, and that they are, you know, that positive reinforcement is given to them.
Like, I think even, like, if you look at the Garda Diversion Youth Awards, I mean, I think those things are really important for kids, right? I really, really do. You know, I'll hear repeated coaches in my therapy room. I will hear certain teachers repeated, you know, I'll know, you know, when a child comes into me, when they start talking about a certain teacher, I will know who that teacher is because I know that teacher has done the extra mile. I know the importance of what we call the power of one in therapy. It only takes one good, safe adult to encourage, you know, a child. It takes one good coach. It takes one good teacher, one good SNA, you know, like, children learn from people outside of their family system as well. You know, like I can inspire somebody. What I noticed, I suppose, I'm in this field now a long time. I'm seeing some of the people, I suppose, some of the kids that I would have had contact with actually going into this field, which is really amazing, right? So like amazing. I love it. I know the impact that certain coaches have had on, you know, young people in the sports, you know, whether they're playing for Kerry or they're hurlers or whatever. I will hear the power of these people's words on the kids that I work with. Right. So like that's the idea of mentors when they'll meet somebody, and you've met somebody, Joe. I've met somebody, you know. I remember working in the Women's Refuge, and I remember, you know, Colette Garvey at the time, she was the manager. She was one of the managers there. And I said to her, probably in 1998, maybe 2000, I said, one day I'd open a therapy centre. But I was kind of laughing in my own head.
Yeah.
She turned around and she said to me, you know, you will do that. She said, "You, Idel, you have a gift." She could see my gift before I could ever see it.
Yeah.
And I still go back to her saying that to me. And I have my own therapy centre here in Kilfin. So, you know, it's that words that we get from outside people, the importance, that when we meet young people, whether they're teenagers or whether they're children, you know, the impact that we can have on those people is just amazing. Now, there's also the negative side.
Yeah. Yeah.
and I'm not going to go down that route. Another show, another day.
Yeah. Idel, it was an absolute pleasure having you on this morning, and all the contributions you do to our different projects here in Radio Kerry and lessons
it.
And
I
all
love
as well.
It.
It's absolutely brilliant. And that Hidden Light, it was just an amazing project. So fulfilling to be involved with, because I think so many people came together for the common goal as well of it.
Absolutely.
So that was brilliant. Yeah. Idel, thanks a million for coming on this morning. We'll talk to you again soon and continued
That's
success.
Great. Thanks, Joe. Take care. Bye-bye.
We're going to take a break. We'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals available in store.
Now, as you're aware, we have a very special programme this morning as part of our Lessons in Awe series, funded by Commissioner Man with the television license fee. We're listening this morning to stories of bravery, and another story of bravery, courage and resilience is exemplified by Svitlana, who is a student of mine in the Kerry College Radio Kerry Broadcasting and Journalism course. And during the week, another student, Caitlin O'Brien, interviewed Svitlana about her journey from Ukraine to Ireland.
Hi, my name is Caitlin O'Brien. I'm joined today by Svitlana Holovana. We are going to be talking about lessons in courage. Svitlana, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Caitlin. I'm happy to join the interview.
Okay, let's start. So 4 years ago this month, Russia invaded Ukraine. Svitlana, can you tell me a little bit about your life before the invasion?
Before the invasion, I lived in Kyiv with my 6-year-old daughter, and I was 7 months pregnant. I had my own business and many hopes for the future.
And at the time of the invasion, what was going through your mind? How were you feeling?
I remember this day when it started. I woke up because of missile attack. It was near 5 o'clock. No one in Ukraine expected that we can be in those trouble. We live in peaceful country, and we didn't realize what happened with us, because we think at first it could be 3 days, then we think it could be few weeks, few months, and it's continuous nowadays, which is big trouble for us.
And how did you decide to leave Kyiv? How did you come to that decision, and what was the process?
It was not easier decision, because I was pregnant and I have no power to leave Ukrainian because I can't plane, and I decided to went to a safety place in Ukrainian. It was far away from hot point. It was Uzhgorod, and I born my son there. And after 1 month, I back to Kyiv. But the life in Ukrainian was worse. Every day was missile attack, and we have no electricity, we have no water, and it was very difficult to be with small kids. And my ex-husband, we have not good relationship, and this relationship that worse when was that, and I was only in my oven with my kids, and one thought was in my head, it's to survive and to protect my kids. This is very motivate me to escape and leave Ukrainian for safety reason.
And so you came to Ireland on your own, is that right?
My friends helped me, which I'm very grateful to her. She suggested me to came to Ireland because she has friends there, and she helped me a lot during our trip. She helped me with heavy bags, with take care about my kids, and I was very very disappointed, and I feel very terrible in that moment because I have no future. I need to lost. I need to leave all what I have in Ukrainian because my migration was forced. It wasn't like planning for a better life. It was only for safety reason.
And you told me before we started this interview that your parents were living in occupied territory, so there was no option for them to come with you.
Yes, it was second terrible stories that my parents live in Lugansk region, and this region was occupied since 2014, and I have no chance to visit them, and they have no chance to leave this territory because when that big invasion, all borders was closed, and I have no chance to came here to came to them.
I'm blown away by the fact that you found the courage to leave Kyiv with your young daughter and your newborn son. And you came to City West in Dublin, and from there you came to Tralee. Would you mind telling us a little bit about that?
Yes, actually, when I went through this challenge, I always have one thought in my head that what's not kill us, make us stronger. And this helped me to go through this challenge. Because my small kids was dependent of me, it's motivate me to be strong and focus only on positive. And when I came to Ireland, it was big surprise for me. I came to Dublin, to City West, and after that, they put me to Tralee Rose Hotel. I can't describe this, and I can't find words how I feel grateful for Ireland and for Irish people who support me in that terrible moment, because it's helped me to survive. It's helped my kids to be in safety and rise in safety place. I will be all life to feel grateful for this help.
And as we have this conversation, you are a student at Kerry College. How did you find the strength and the bravery to move forward, to rebuild, especially with everything that's still going on at home for you?
I always think that that everything that happens is for the best. And I'm sure that our thoughts influence for our mood and for our life. And that's why it is important to always focus on positive moments and try to see benefits or something good in every challenge. No matter how frightening a situation may seem, there is always something positive in it. And I never think about what you have lost, and don't overthink or pressure yourself. We should focus only on positive thoughts. And for example, when I have negative thoughts, when negative thoughts come to me, I start listening to audiobooks. It helps me stop negative thinking about myself and my life, and retrain to mind to think positively.
Thank you so much, Svetlana. And I just have one last question. I guess I'm wondering, what is your hope for the future now? What would you like to see for yourself and your children?
I'm 41 years old, and I have good career in Kyiv and have a lot of things in Ukrainian, but I lost all of this, and now I should build my life from first step. And I decided to apply to Kerry College. I decided to start study, and I have a hope to find myself there and to be useful to Ireland and to create my new life there, because Ireland is a very peaceful country. And first of all, I want my kids to live in peaceful place and rise in a good place like Ireland.
Mm. Even though the circumstances are terrible, we are so lucky to have you here with us, and I wish you all the best for the future. Thank you so much, Svetlana.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that is Svetlana's story there, and I want to thank Caitlin for carrying out that interview so professionally as well. And now we'll take a break. We'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy-to-cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer ready meals available.
Now continuing our very special episode on courage. This is part of our Lessons in Awe series, funded by Cum Mhisiúna Mann with the television license fee. And now we're going to speak with Pat Falvey, whose name is synonymous with groundbreaking exploration and mountaineering achievements. He's celebrated worldwide for his unparalleled feat of completing the seven summits, including Mount Everest, twice from both the Tibetan and Nepalese sides. This monumental achievement distinguished him as the first person ever to do so. Pat, firstly, thanks a million for talking to me this morning. It's a long time since I was talking to you. I remember talking to you a few years ago and in conversation about your wonderful story and your life. But can we go back? Were you always brave and courageous and resilient? Was that always something you had as a child growing up, or is it something you developed?
No, I think it's actually developed. And I think the most important thing with, you know, having that self-belief and self-confidence is mentors. Like, my greatest mentor was my grandmother, who always taught me, like, you know, if you think you can, you will, and if you think you can't, you won't. So she beat that into me when I was 6 years of age. And, like, I probably started my first business when she bought me a pram to collect secondhand clothes. So the first thing in life, I think, in relation to anything, like, we're all the same. Like, in other words, we all have the same size brains. We all actually think the same. We all crawl at the same time. We get up at the same time. We go to school at the same time. So I do think that influences, you know, on who is your mentor creates that belief, which in turn creates the courage for you to go after the things that you want. And, you know, people are very, very susceptible to good advice. You know, probably from the age of five, if you can actually get a person believing in themselves at that stage. And, you know, teachers are fantastic for doing that too.
Mm. Is it something then as well, as a young person, you might have to block out the negative then? Because, you know, like, we always have we all have someone in our lives that was a real positive impact. But then you have the people that are negative impact as well, the people that tell you you can't do something.
Yeah, well, it's a true fact that they say that you are the average of the five people you hang around with. Mm. And I know it's very hard, like, if you're a young child, like, to decide who's negative and who's positive. But, you know, what you will find is that you will know the people that, like, takes the energy from you, even at a very, very early years. And I find a lot of positive people, like, you know, are involved in sports. You know, like, they get involved in something. There's a community forming there, and it's the friendships that you create even from that earlier years about positivity, about being part of something, part of a community, part of a club, that actually gives the confidence to go on and do something. It also makes you actually want stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, you want to win a match, or you want to, you know, like, do something good that your parents are proud of. So I was always like that. I always say, for instance, my grandmother, I went to live with my grandmother in a council house. And from a very early years, I always wanted to impress her you know, that's, you know, the advice she was giving me I could do. And believe it or not, I know now this is kind of off the scale. Like, by the time I was 12, I couldn't read or write, and I couldn't even read or write properly till I was 30. Mm. But she gave me the self-belief that, you know, I was able to afford to put deposit down in the house when I was 12 in what she taught me. She taught me, like, you know, like how to become one of the youngest door-to-door salesmen in the world. I used to collect secondhand clothes. And I believe, like, that, you know, young children are very influenced by their mentors. And, like, if you have a parent that's constantly negative, giving out about everybody, giving out about you, my, you know, then it's going to affect you. But if you can find the, like, and I talk more to parents on this now than if it's a case of young children listening, you can actually destroy a child by constantly telling them they're not good enough, you know, like that they have to, you know, do stuff like that they don't actually want to do. The one thing I always said, like, is my grandmother always said, if I want to put my hand in the fire, she said, put it in. You won't put it a second time. You probably won't put it the first time either. But she instills that ability to want to do stuff and want to succeed in stuff. Like, very earlier, like, I suppose, as distinct to the football and hurling, like, I took up running. And by being around, like, with those people, like, in the club, you know, it made me competitive. It made me want to be better. Not even to win, but to be better for myself. And I think that's a great grounding for young people, is to join a club, be part of something. Because nowadays, you know, lots of kids, and sorry, I won't call young children, right, okay, even up to the age of 15 or 16, are stuck behind the computer and stuck in to their iPhone, iPads. And it actually takes that... you know, that challenge out for them. Whereas the challenge, like, of doing stuff, playing football, climbing a tree, creates that risk element that follows you through right through life. You know what I mean? If you're completely adverse, and parents are probably at fault of this too now, of not having their children do anything, like, you know, that's challenging or exciting, it carries through into later years. Like, the big thing is running in a schoolyard. Like, for instance, lots of schools have stopped it. You know, like, they've stopped that, what do they call it, that spirit of what a child is all about, is trying out things.
Yeah, and risk-taking and everything else. Just in relation to your own life, like, you're an author, you're a motivational speaker, you a mountaineer, famous for what you've achieved. In your own life, was there ever an occasion or example where you came across something that you really had to summon that bravery or that courage that you had developed over the years? And I suppose by implication, that you were at a moment where you were afraid as well?
Yeah, well, the first thing is, fear is a very important thing, you know, but, like, 90% of all fear is imaginary. Like, I remember when I said I was going to climb Mount Everest, my dad was crying, and he said to me, he said, son, you're going to die, because one of four died, right? And he said to me, like, he was really serious about it, like, that what would mom do if I died? And then, like, I said, what do I do, Dad? He said, take up golf. And I said, golf? And he said, yeah, take up golf. But anyway, the following morning on the Cork Examiner, which was called at the time, front page headline, golfer hit with golf ball dies. Yeah, like, well, I finished my career as a golfer, by the way. But the thing with it is, what I will say, there's risk in everything. There's risks in crossing the road. Like, if you become too wrapped up in cotton wool in your earlier years, it'll actually continue through. The most important thing is that when you decide to do something, you have a plan A, plan B, and a plan C. But the other thing that actually has, that stops people, young people in particular, right, is what do they call it, their people telling them, critics, right? Telling them they can't do stuff. Mm. Like I was told, like, you know, when I was 10 or 12, like when I had dreams, I was told, like, because I came from a council house, who do you think you are? Your father is poor. You're poor. You'll never actually achieve anything in your life. My teachers told me the same thing.
Whoa.
And I always remember my dad saying to me, you know, telling the teacher, I remember there was a guy brother one time, and he told me I was useless, I was this and I was that. I was only 12 or 13. But my dad had given me the confidence to say, look, I can see where you're coming from, but it's none of my business what you think. It's what I think, right? Mm-hmm. So I had that instilled with me, like, all my life, like, from the time I was a child. That, in other words, it's what I believe is what counts, not what other people tell me I can't do and I can do. So, yeah, I was afraid at times? Yes, I was afraid because I stepped outside the box. You see, if we look at all the our educational system now, do you know where they put people? In the box. Mm. And lots of people stay in the box for all their lives. So if you're listening there outside, like, you know, like the your audience, right? Just take a look at yourself. And if you're in the box, and I don't care what age you are, 5, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, as you get, sometimes you're trapped in that box and you do as you're told and you comply to all the regulations, all of the rules. And sometimes it can lead to, I won't say a boring life because everyone's life is exciting, but it traps you within that confines. But the minute, and even try it there now if you want to. Pretend you're in a box, in a room, and then step outside the box and walk around the room. And that's why it's very, very important to become creative. Like, I love, you know, people that are creative, that actually come up with stuff, to have a dream, to have a goal. Like, when I was only 15, like, I remember my dad saying to me, and he clapped me on the back because I was afraid. And he said, son, he says, you're a dreamer. And like, there's no, and he said, you're the biggest dreamer I know. Because people were trying to stop me dreaming of who I was going to do or what I was going to be. And he said, dream and dream big. But remember, it's in the following of the dream is where the success lies, not in achieving it. Achieving it is the bonus. Mm. So if you restrict young people's dreams, goals, or aspirations or what they're thinking, then it kind of traps them. And, you know, you can become fairly not content with your life. So I wasn't a brilliant student. But the thing with it is I had certain other talents, like, that I didn't let people put down. Mm. So my advice is, like, you know, dream and dream big, as my dad said. But remember, it's in the following of the dream is where the success lies. And don't be afraid. Don't let fear conquer your ability to actually follow something, because 80% of all fear is imaginary. Like, you can, you know, like, a lot of the time people make up, because, like, our subconscious, and I know the audience, like, that I'm speaking to now may not realize, like, but your subconscious is there to restrict you from doing things, in particular dangerous things. Mm. So it's like when I said I was going to climb Everest, the first thing my subconscious said, like, is, oh, like, you're going to die. And then, like, it puts all the negatives in you. And, like, I had to learn very fast, like I said, you know, like, pee off, right? Okay. I'm going to study this and put the subconscious back in my box, because the subconscious is for fight or flight. That's what it's been invented for. It's when you can actually, you know, start doing stuff that is successful. And a successful thing could be, you know, go out and play a sport, right? Mm. It actually learns you how to deal with the subconscious, putting it in the box of dealing with fear, right? And of having dreams. So it's all about, like, having a goal, having a dream. And, like, when I say dream, you don't have to dream about climbing Mount Everest. You don't have to dream, like, about being, you know, something, but, like, do have a dream of which you can continue with. It could be, okay, I like to do better in my exams. You don't have to have A's. It's just to do better. And if you don't, just have another dream. Like, don't let your education put you down. You know, and if you have people to have your back, and this is where parents and teachers are very important, right? I always had teachers to have my back. When they seen I was a spirited young fellow, you know, I had people, you know, when I fell back and when I won't say get depressed, because it's a hard thing to say, like, about depression when you're young, right? You know what I mean? It might feel like depression, but it might not be. But the one thing, look for the people to have your back, the teacher, your parents, your family. And I have had more times that I was down and I was out. And yes, it's amazing, like, that how family, friends and educators can have your back to push it on. But you have to ask as well. Yeah. Most people don't ask.
Yeah. Pat, it's an absolute pleasure speaking to you this morning. And thanks a million for taking the time. And because, like, what you've said there is so inspirational. Congratulations again on all your success and achievement. But I'm sure the young people of Kerry will take a lot out of this. So thanks a million for coming on this morning.
And as always, Joe, thank you very much.
And now we'll take a break. We'll have more after these.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan.
Now, all throughout the programme, we were talking about courage. And this is part of our series, Lessons in Awe, which is a new radio and podcast series produced by Radio Kerry in collaboration with child and adolescent psychotherapist Adele Lawler and funded by Cumhuisiú na mBan and the television licence fee. There's lots of different people involved. You've Fiona Stack, you've Connie Broderick, myself, John Davis, Ben McGailey and Dervla Cronin. And then we've a lot of great contributors as well. Some of them including like the likes of Donal Hickey and some Kerry GA stars and so much more. So it's going to be a great series and it's going to be played in Radio Kerry over the coming weeks. And there's all special kinds of episodes, all taking on a different theme. And it's where young people will learn from older people and older people will learn from young people as well. As each 15-minute episode focuses on a life theme like nature, courage, which we heard this morning, sport, family, play and community, using the real voices of children, older people, local storytellers and invited guests. And the series highlights moments of wonder, connection and reflection in a fast-changing world. So its goal is to help young people rediscover awe through personal stories, shared experiences and the natural environment, while also bridging generations through conversation and imagination. And like I said, stay tuned to Radio Kerry for that. I hope you enjoyed the programme now this morning. Some amazing stories, some inspirational stories inside there, young and old, which was great to hear. And courage, we can see now, comes in all different forms. And maybe you've showed courage in your life and you've inspired people as well. And if you have, fair play to you and well done. I want to thank the contributors to today's programme. We had Adele Lawler and we had Pat Falvey, Ian O'Connell. We also had Caitlin and Svetlana and we had Niamh Daly and we won't forget Nisha and Evie and also Malvina, Brendan and Clodagh. So some amazing guests there. And like I said, I hope you enjoyed the programme this morning. And this morning's programme is part of the series Lessons in Awe, which is funded by Cumhuisiú na mBan with the television licence fee. Now, next Saturday, we're going to stick with the young people theme because we will have a very special programme of TYs. Transition years are going to be in from around the county. Remember this, it's a great series we did. We were one of the first ones, or the first ones to do it in the country, where we bring TYs into Radio Kerry for the week and they learn all aspects of radio and then they produce a programme at the end of it on Saturday. So that'll be next Saturday. And it's amazing to see these young people go on. And we're starting to see them have pursue careers in media, because last year we had Hannah O'Sullivan from Port McGee who did the TY course but did the full-time broadcasting course with us in Kerry College and Radio Kerry. And we have two more students now as well who are undertaking their journey after being in the TY. And during the week, I seen another broadcasting student who did the TY course was in getting work experience in Radio Kerry. So that's absolutely fantastic to see. So tune in to that next Saturday from 9 a.m. My thanks to Abigail Bernard, who was on sound. Pat Kelly is on the way, so keep it here on Radio Kerry. Our theme for In Focus is Spring Into Life. So send those photos to jmcgill@radiokerry.ie. Until next Saturday morning at 9 a.m, look after yourself and take care.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Because at least one day of the weekend should involve someone else doing all the cooking. Order your delicious takeaway from Quinlan's today.